So I know that is the first lecture, and as such, people will take their time to get here, but we cannot really wait much. In the last lecture, we discussed the notion of the description of quantum states when there is ignorance in what the quantum state of a system is. And of course, we introduced the density matrix to describe it, which is density matrix is just a classical probability distribution over quantum states, or can be interpreted as such. The last thing that we said is like, well, we quantified the amount of ignorance that we have about the state of a quantum system by using, for example, quantities like purity, or even better, something that has, you know, something that has a clear interpretation in information theory, which is the Shannon entropy of the distribution rho, distribution over states in a Hilbert space. Make sense? So we use that Shannon entropy, and that Shannon entropy of the state rho, we called it the von Neumann entropy. Make sense? But it's nothing else. It's just the Shannon entropy of the state rho, which is, again, a distribution, a classical distribution of over quantum states. Which means, of course, that that state, or a state, that density operator, of course, has, in a way, has a notion of ignorance, classical ignorance of what state you actually have. Makes sense? Not going to get into the discussion about much, unless you ask, and then we can get a little bit. But I'm not going to get much into the discussion about the foundations of the description, because probably you do it in quantum foundations, and you will probably talk about proper mixtures versus improper mixtures, which is, in a way, interpretation, how to read out where is that ignorance coming from? What does it mean if you have a single shot system and so on? Because with ensembles, it's very easy to interpret, like we do in classical mechanics. But sometimes you describe with density operators things that because you have ignorance, right? So the state, and for me, although I'm not going to get much into the discussion of this, for me, the state rho is a description of the state of knowledge of the person as much as the person about the state, as much as it is a description about the state. Make sense? So you could call me leaning towards epistemic more. I do believe, and then we can discuss that maybe in discussion if you want, I do believe that you cannot really give physical value, face value, physical value as an element of physical reality to the wave function, and certainly not rho either, okay? Again, if you want, we can discuss that, but that's more for a foundations course, I think. Make sense, everybody? So yeah, this rho describes the state of the system, and also your state of knowledge about the system, which is important, obviously. So important it is, classically even, right, that that's how what you do when you operate with gases in rooms and things like that. You need to include your ignorance about the system in your description of the system. All right, so because this is this von Neumann entropy that I defined is a Shannon entropy, we started a little discussion whether this Shannon entropy is thermodynamic or not. And for that, for this discussion, it's important to actually figure out whether this S, this again, this Shannon entropy we define, can be interpreted as a, indeed as a thermodynamic entropy. So I'm gonna do a little calculation, which is finding the Gibbs equilibrium state when the system is not allowed to exchange energy on average with anything, all right? What would be the state of equilibrium? And how do we find that? Well, we know that we use the notion of Gibbs thermality. The notion of Gibbs thermality tells me that under spontaneous processes, or the rationale from the notion of the Gibbs thermality is, well, under spontaneous processes, entropy can only increase. Therefore, as it equilibrates, a system can only increase its entropy. And at some point, it will reach equilibrium, at which entropy will stop increasing. So we would be at a maximum of entropy when we reach an equilibrium state. So Gibbs thought, OK, let's find the extremum of the entropy, and that will actually characterize the state of equilibrium. Make sense? Right, so I'm going to write the spectral decomposition of rho here. Those pi are the eigenprojectors of rho with eigenvalue rho I. This is, of course, the von Neumann entropy written in terms of the eigenvalues of rho and the multiplicity of those eigenvalues. And I is the multiplicity of the ith eigenvalue. the expectation value of E, which is of course the trace of, where did I write it? Did I? Well, it's the trace of rho E, given by this. Of course, here I used that rho and H have to commute in the equilibrium state. Obviously, we already can impose that because it has to be an equilibrium state. Make sense, everybody? So this is the expectation value of E. And of course, that's the trace constraint, right? The fact when we optimize, when we maximize the entropy, we cannot get out of the set of physical states that, among other things, rho has to be positive. It has to be trace one. Okay? Any questions about the setup? Okay. The multiplicity of the eigenvalue rho I, because of course, rho could have degenerate eigenvalues. Okay? And this PI is a set of the set of eigenprojectors over the eigenspaces of rho. Now, of course, we can write, we're going to optimize and we're going to write the problem as a Lagrange multipliers problem because it's an optimization under constraints. So the function we want to optimize is S, but of course we want to optimize it under the constraints that the trace of rho H is E and the trace of rho is 1. So we included two Lagrange multipliers, beta and mu, imposing that, those constraints. Make sense? All right, so the first thing to realize is that in here, nothing depends on the eigenvectors of any operator here. As you can tell, everything here is a von Neumann entropy. It's not dependent on, the eigenvectors of rho at all. It's the sum of the eigenvalues log eigenvalues. If you use spectral decomposition, the spectral theorem there. The trace of rho h is also independent of the eigenvectors of rho, because again, rho and h diagonalize in the same basis, and this is a trace. Okay, so this is independent of the basis. The trace of rho obviously is basis independent. So this does not depend at all on the eigenvectors of S. Make sense? So this just becomes an optimization over eigenvalues only. So it's very nice. That means that I can write the condition as this. All right. So we have as many equations as the dimension of rho. Make sense, everybody? Well, not really, in the sense that some of them are degenerate, but at most, as many equations. Let's say we have as many equations as independent eigenvalues of rho. Okay?
Sorry, you mentioned, but what's P hat again?
The eigenprojector over the eigenspace of rho with eigenvalue rho I.
Okay.
And the rank of this is the degeneracy, the multiplicity of the eigenvalue.
Okay, so is it like ket rho I bra rho I?
Well, that would be the case if the multiplicity is 1. But imagine that you have a double eigenvalue. Then the projector is a two-dimensional projector, not a one-dimensional projector. You have a rank 2 projector. You cannot write it as, it's the sum of 2, bracket, bracket, if it's a multiplicity of 2.
Oh, okay.
Make sense? Yeah. Diagonalization, right? When you diagonalize, if you find an eigenvalue multiplicity 2, then you need to find one basis of that space and then write the eigenprojectors in that space. Make sense? Okay. Not every, you can have a row whose all eigenvalues, think of the maximally mixed state. It's the identity. Eigenvalue 1, multiplicity n. Or not 1, 1 over d, multiplicity n. Make sense, everybody? All right. Okay, so this is a very simple equation. We can take partial derivatives now with respect to the eigenvalues, and the resulting condition is minus log rho I minus 1 minus beta EI minus mu equals 0. Make sense? Well, that equation, now we can transform it into an equation on operator. We could solve for the rho i's, and that would be enough, but let's try to skip steps. And we can do that by making this now an equation on operators, which is very easy. All that we need to do, it's multiply by the eigenprojectors pi. So you see, this is the spectral decomposition of rho. Eigenvalue times eigenprojector. Okay. So multiply by the eigenprojectors pi and sum all the equations. With that, we're going to get an equation on operators. Okay. All right, so multiply both sides by pi. Again, the eigenprojector associated with the eigenvalue rho I. And we get the following, minus log rho hat minus identity minus beta h hat minus mu identity equals 0. That's an operator equation. Questions about that? I did one step, multiply this by pi and sum. Then spectral theorem tells me that the sum of log rho I pi is, of course, the log of rho hat, spectral theorem, and rho is a positive operator, so it's fine. The log is analytic. Well, for that, okay? Then the sum of all the eigenprojectors, of course, the identity, because it spans the whole Hilbert space. Same thing here. This is the sum of the eigenvalues of E of H times the eigenprojectors of H, so spectral decomposition of H. Remember that H and rho diagonalize in the same basis. And finally, same thing, the identity here, the sum of all the eigenprojectors. Make sense? Cool. All right, so this is nice because this is an equation that I can solve very easily. I can put everything to the right, okay? Except for rho, of course. If I do that, I'm going to get that rho is equal to the exponential of minus beta h hat minus mu plus one, oh, that mu. Mu plus one identity. Okay, which of course the two exponentials factor because the identity commutes with everything.
Didn't we start with log of exponential or log of 2?
Sorry, what?
Was it log base 2 or log exponential?
I don't care about the base, no.
I mean,
it's going to be the same maximum.
Constant.
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to find the maximum. Typically, I'm going to use log 2. This is a quantum information course. So it's a Shannon entropy, and I prefer my information to be measured in bits. So I'm going to be using log 2. There are other choices there. You can take a natural logarithm because, I don't know, and then people call those units of information nats. You can take base 10. And are they called bits? I don't remember what they're called. But this is, bits is the way. I understand my information as answers to yes or no questions. That's the best way, in my opinion. For this, doesn't matter. That's why I write just log, because the maximum will be the same. All right, so these two exponentials factor. So I'm gonna write them explicitly, factoring like that. Now we can, this would be the form of the extremum of rho. Now we can compute the values of mu and the values of beta by imposing the constraints as we typically do with a Lagrange multiplier problem. Okay. So to find mu, use the constraints that trace of rho hat is equal to 1. That means that let me abbreviate it by calling mu plus 1. I'm going to define as the log of z of beta, if you don't mind, for notational purposes. And this constraint implies that z of beta is equal to the trace of e to the minus beta h. Make sense? And I call it z because that's something that we are very familiar with in statistical mechanics. We call that the partition function. Make sense? All right, to find eta, we use that the trace of rho hat h is equal to e, and that means that e is equal to 1 over z of beta trace of h exponential of minus beta h, which is, of course, partial beta of the log of the partition function. Okay, so beta is the solution to this equation. Agreed? Now, this is nice because this equilibrium state, again, is only described by a function, by a parameter beta, and that parameter beta is, if you want, given by the condition that the partial derivative of the log of the partition function is e. Make sense? So we found that the equilibrium state, the families of equilibrium states are of the form rho t, I call it rho t, or we call it rho beta, it's equal to 1 over z of beta sum on I exponential of minus ei beta eigenprojector. Where ei are the eigenvalues of the Hamiltonian, which happen to be the eigenvalues of rho as well, because they commute. Make sense? Now let's look at that state. And what state is this? This state is telling me that it's a state, okay, that has a probability of being in the eigenstate of ei given by this exponential divided by the partition function, which is the sum of all these exponentials. Make sense? We recognize the state from your thermodynamics. What state has a population given by this factor divided by the partition function?
Wait, was it minus d beta log z?
I'm not sure what you're referring to, sorry.
The energy you said in the last term, second to last term, d beta log z. Is it minus d beta log z?
No.
Because if you take the derivative with respect to beta from the trace of exponential, it's about a minus beta h bar. Minus h bar comes down, isn't it?
What's h bar, sorry? The h, you mean?
H hat. Z beta is equal to trace of e to the power.
Yes, sorry, my bad. Thank you. Very good. Makes sense, everybody? Sorry about that. I was very confused. I was trying to find the formula. That's my bad. I was an H bar here. Sorry. No, but it was my bad. All right. So, where were we? Yeah. This state, the optimal state that we have here, has a population distribution that over the, so it's diagonal in the base of the Hamiltonian, and the population distribution is given by factors that are exponential of minus I beta divided by the partition function. This is the Maxwell-Boltzmann distribution, or the Boltzmann distribution. So this is a state whose population in the eigenbasis of H is the Boltzmann. Distribution. Agreed? Only that if, go ahead.
I just said, yeah.
Ah, nice. the only thing is that I didn't tell you what beta is, though. Beta here is a parameter characterizing the equilibrium, but if we equate it to the max to the Boltzmann distribution, that tells you that beta, with beta being 1 over kVT, you can associate it to a temperature. Make sense? That's by just comparing with the Boltzmann distribution. Okay. So, as you can tell, the von Neumann entropy, or rather, maximizing in this case, the von Neumann entropy, we find that we obtain a Maxwell-Boltzmann state. States whose populations in the energy eigenbasis are given by the Boltzmann distribution. Make sense? So it feels like of all the functions that we could have used to characterize anything that feels like entropy informationally, there are many, as you may have heard. You can have families of Renyi entropies and everything, right? Of all of them, turns out that this one is a kind of a thermodynamic entropy. The Shannon entropy of the state, when maximized, gives you a thermal state. Make sense? Any questions about that?
This p hat ei, I guess that used to be the Hamiltonian in the exponential, and it's been applied to...
That's right. Spectral decomposition of spectral theorem, rather. So that's the exponential. All that I did, if you want, from the exponential of this, not the exponential of that. Where is rho? Here. Here. All that I did is the spectral theorem on the exponential of minus beta. Make sense? All right, so a couple of comments on that. What happens when beta goes to zero? When beta goes to zero, you get that rho beta going to zero is equal to 1 over the partition function when beta goes to zero, sum over I PEI. Okay. When beta goes to zero, we see that the partition function, so okay, this is the spectral decomposition of identity in the eigenbasis of H. And when beta goes to zero, Z goes to the number of dimensions of the space. So this thing is 1 over the identity when beta goes to zero. So at infinite temperature, you get the maximally mixed state. When the temperature is infinite, you have no clue what your state is. It could be anything, literally, in any basis. Homogeneous distribution on any basis that you want. Make sense? Because remember, the identity, or multiples of, rather, are the only operators that are the same in all bases, that have the same expression, the same coordinates in all bases. Does that make sense? Of course, the dimension of the space is the sum of all the multiplicities of all the eigenvalues. All right, so, by the way, temperature zero, this is gonna be the only thing, if the temperature is zero, beta goes to infinity if you want, the only thing that's gonna survive here is the ground state. Check it, and I'm gonna do it. So the temperature zero state is the ground state, is the eigenstate of H with the lowest eigenvalue. Just one thing, though, just to keep in mind, I'm not going to do it because this is not a QFT course or anything, but one thing to realize is that the Gibbs state is not well-defined in infinite dimensions in general. You can see it right away because the partition function, where is the partition function? Sorry, here. The partition function requires that this thing is trace class. And unsurprisingly, look at that, you get a 1 over D here. This thing for infinite dimensions is not well-defined, and the reason is that this operator here, it's not going to be trace class in general, like except for a zero measure set of cases, this operator is not going to be trace class. So this trace does not exist in general. So you cannot really define the partition function in infinite dimensions, something that you probably have heard in your quantum field theory course and so on. And in those cases, we need to use a more general notion of thermality that reproduces that when it coincides with it. And it's something else, or something else when it doesn't. And that's a notion that gives thermality that connects periodicity in imaginary time, if you want, of the correlation functions of bounded operators with thermality. And the period is actually the beta. So, but I'm not going to get into that. Just keep it in mind that this only works for safely for finite dimensions because there's an implicit assumption that this is trace class. It would also work if this operator is trace class in infinite dimensions, but that doesn't happen often. It certainly doesn't happen for the simplest of field theories, if you want. You have in free space, if you have a scalar field theory free in free space, then you're not going to get that that's a trace class operator.
What is a trace class?
Trace class means that, well, you can understand that the trace exists. trace class is related to the trace of A. In general, you have A, and it's adjoined, square root, and then you say the trace of that is does exist or not. But of course, this is a self-adjoint operator, so it's the same as saying that the trace exists. Okay? Make sense? If I say trace class, I mean the trace, I can take traces. But in general, this operator, I cannot. Example, you cannot take the trace of this operator in infinite dimensions, right? Make sense, everybody?
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate that.
What can you take the trace of that in infinite dimensions again? Because
continuous infinite dimensions. Don't think of an infinite dimensional matrix. If it's an infinite dimensional matrix, exists in the limit, but think of continuous. Think of the X operator. What is the trace of the X operator?
Oh, okay.
Or P square. That's what we're talking about. Makes sense. Imagine your energy is P square over 2L. What is the trace of that? I mean, that one is bounded. Yeah. Okay, but in general, this doesn't exist. Okay?
Sorry, I didn't follow.
No, I'm just talking to myself. Ignore it. I don't want to confuse you more. Okay, makes sense, everybody? Yeah.
But in Gifty, we have a way to define...
Say again?
Yeah. In Gifty, we have a way to define a partition function.
Uh-huh. How?
How would that be related to this partition?
Tell me the way, and I'll tell you how. What's that?
Yeah.
And Euclidean time? Then maybe the analytical continuation on the complex plane of that doesn't exist. It's the reflection of that. The way that you have is formal. It's not really well defined. That's what I mean in general. Because you are assuming that you can analytically continuate that partition function to the complex plane because eventually you want to undo the big rotation, right? You cannot undo it formally. It's the same problem. So what you do is you typically keep working in Euclidean time and assume that it works. It's okay to do it. I'm not saying it's bad. It's okay to do it because we don't know anything else that we can do and we learn a lot from doing it. It is okay. It's not a criticism of it. But what I'm telling you is that in general, that is not a good way. Mathematically, a pure mathematician may object to it. Yeah.
When we work in Lorentzian signature, then it just does not have the same interpretation as a statistical object.
Well, it does, but through the KMS theorem, if you want, so which I'm not going to cover here. But you see, remember that thermality can be understood as periodicity in imaginary time. So if you weak rotate, then you can. There are some conditions that the state needs to satisfy to for this to work. The thing is that those conditions are not necessarily satisfied in general, and you have to be careful with those things. Again, this is if you're more interested in that view of the problem, you can check the videos of the relativistic quantum information course that I taught in the past year, because I do deal with that in that, but it's not the time here. It's of course interesting to know when these things work and when they don't. But yeah, even for a free scalar field theory, the partition function is ill-defined. And there's no way around that. Make sense? All right. The next thing that we need to, so I hope the objective of this is to discuss that indeed the von Neumann entropy, which is a Shannon entropy, is thermodynamic. So information is physical. Thermodynamics and information extremely related, with each other. Make sense? In fact, thermodynamics is an information theory, and an information theory is thermodynamics. I would go both ways, and I could argue both ways. Make sense? So cool that heat and workflows and entropy and so on is just about information. About what you can know and what you can do with what you know. It's literally that. only with constants that give them units of energy. All right, cool. All right, so now a little bit of a formalization, because we're going to need it. How do I do that? Let's see. No. Okay, then manual. Okay. Because we're going to need it, I'm going to write the formalism, a little bit of notation of multipartite systems, because obviously we're going to need that to describe entanglement and correlations. Just very quickly, things that you have seen, but we will just practice it anyways a little bit. Okay. All right. So we have consider a bipartite system AB, the Hilbert space associated with A or B, of A and B is, I wrote or, HA or HB, all right, the joint Hilbert space is then HAB is the tensor of HA and HB. Okay. If AI and AI are bases, well, orthonormal bases. HA and HB, then which we will notate equivalently, of course, as AIBI. Is a basis, an orthonormal basis of HAB. Again, things that you've seen to the nausea here, if you want. But this allows us now to define the notion of reduced state or partial state. We define the partial state of rho A over the state rho AB. Okay, so what do I want? I have a bipartite system, and I want to know, I have the full description of the system. Somebody, yeah.
Sorry, the notation, is that BI or BJ?
Next. BJ, oh.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Obviously, the dimension of that has to be the product of the dimensions. It cannot be an I. So, I have the state rho AB describing the full system. And I want just, well, I'm not interested in the state of the whole system. I'm interested in the state of A, because that's what I have access to. Or conversely, right? Somebody, there's the description of the whole system. And then somebody says, yeah, but this person only has access to system A. So the state, as seen by this person, cannot be rho AB. It's going to be only the state of A. How do we get that? Well, you know that from statistical mechanics already. what you do is, well, because I don't care about the system B, sum over all possibilities that the system B is in, all right? Do the, get the marginal, huh? Sum over everything that could happen for B. Make sense? So we define that as the partial trace. Row A is the partial trace over B of row AB. And what is that? This is the sum over all possible occurrences on B of row AB. Now this notation, although you've seen it a lot, let me remind you, this is not a number, okay? Because what that means formally is this, sum over I is equivalent to sum over I of I do nothing on A, but I sum over all possibilities on B. That's what it means. So it's still an operator on the Hilbert space of A. Make sense? If we use notation, we never write this identity. We just notate it like that. Make sense, everybody? So this is a density operator on the Hilbert space HA. Make sense? All right. Same way, rho B, of course, is going to be the trace over A of rho AB. Or in other words, sum over I, AI, rho AB, AI. Have you done partial traces before, all of you? Has anybody not done partial traces?
Yeah.
You probably did. Do you remember how to, if I give you a state, would you know how to take the partial trace? It's whether I should do an example or not.
Programs that do
it. Yeah, but in the tutorial, it may be helpful to know. And it's also sad because sometimes it's easy and...
I could use your refresher.
Yeah, for sure. Let's do a relevant case as an example. But I need your help, because arithmetics is not my field of expertise. So when I make mistakes, you tell me, okay? All right.
Me too.
It's typical. Actually, once met a guy, number theories. Arithmetic is actually his field of expertise. So we always, when we had meetings, he was the one in charge of counting everybody and making sure everybody was there. It was nice, very reassuring. Have a real expert doing that. All right, so what we're going to do is the following. I'm gonna give you a state. In fact, I'm gonna give you a pure state. This is gonna take a while because these calculations, even the most innocent ones, take a while to write even, okay? The state I'm gonna give you is this one. A bipartite state, it's gonna be even pure. Where 0 and 1 are elements of an orthonormal basis. The dimension of the Hilbert space is, the relevant dimension of the Hilbert space in any case is 2 of each subsystem, so 4 total. Make sense? All right, so we want to find rho A, the partial state of A. So imagine that we know, or somebody knows, that the total state of the system is well known. So you see, we have 0 ignorance, it's a pure state, agreed? The von Neumann entropy of that state is 0. We know exactly what state it is. We want to ask now what the state of A is. Like if somebody has only access to subsystem A, what is that state? Make sense? All right, so then first thing is finding rho AB. This is, of course, psi AB. Let's find rho AB. That's just long. But again, it's... is the ket times the bra, if you want. So you get 0, 0,
0, 0.
I'm not going to write the A's and the B's. We understand that the first character is going to be A and the second B. Make sense? I will write it when I need it, because sometimes for tracing, for clarity purposes, it's better to write it. So I will be switching between not writing and writing to save time a little bit. Make sense? All right. So then you have 0, 0, 1, 1. And you also have 1, 1. Ow. Sorry. Zero, zero, and then you have 1, 1, 1. Agreed?
Yeah.
Perfect. So this is the state of row AB. Now we want to find row A. So what we need to do is to trace over B on row AB. Or in other words, sum I equals 0, 1, or I in 0, 1, because that's all the i's that there are here, of I, I'm tracing B, B,
row AB,
IB. Okay? Or in other words, this is going to be 0, B, row AB, 0, B, plus 1B, row AB,
1B.
Agreed, everybody?
Yes.
Perfect. All right, well, let's do it. Let's compute the two terms. First, we compute 0B, row AB, 0B. I'll write all the terms for this one. Not for the other one, though, but for this one, I'll do. This would be 0B. 0A, 0A, the first term, and then I'm going to write it explicitly.
Why not? There's a
little. You know, everything else is 0, you can switch it if you want to.
Yeah, I don't know to what extent I should do it. This is for practicing doing partial traces. It's very boring if you already know how to do it. It's only helpful if you want to see it done. So, I don't know, again, typically, I don't know to what extent.
Yeah, I think it's easy. The rest is zero.
Perfect, perfect. The rest is zero. So I can write only the non-zero elements, or?
Yeah.
All right. So this would be, let's do it just by hand. So if we multiply this one from both sides from zero, this survives, and we get 0A, 0A. Agreed?
Yes.
And all the rest are going to be zero, because either from the left or from the right, you have a 0B somewhere. Coida that 1B, and they're orthogonal. Make sense?
Yeah.
Wonderful. Now, the 1B, row A, 1B, you could do the same thing, but you don't even have to, because you know the state is symmetric under the exchange of 0 and 1. So this has to be 1 half 1A, 1A. And then I hope everybody then remembers how to take partial traces. This is going to be 1 over 2. 0, A, 0, A, plus 1A, 1A. In other words, this is 1 half, 8 and 80 over A. Agreed?
Yeah.
Nice. So this is something strange from the point of view of comparing things that we're used to in classical mechanics with this result in quantum mechanics, which is, well, if I have the full information about a system and I erase one of the subsystems, classically, I expect to lose no information about the subsystem, right? Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So if I don't have, if you have a system AB, imagine two books, right? And then I erase information about the second book, I erase the book, nothing happens to the book that is left. Now, for this state, something weird happens. And the weird thing that happens is that when I erase the information about B, I know everything about the false full system. But when I want to know the information about A, and if I only have access to one of the subsystems, I know absolutely nothing about subsystem A. This is in maximally mixed state. maximal entropy, maximal ignorance. And this is weird. That doesn't happen classically. It's like somebody erased one book and suddenly the other one is gibberish. Make sense?
It's not always going to be.
I mean for this state in particular. There's something special about that state. That state in particular is so that when you erase one of the subsystems, the other one becomes maximally ignorant. Mm. Yep.
Is this because the information is only a correlation between measures?
That's a way of saying it. This state is special because this state is what we're going to call maximally entangled state. Now, my definition of entanglement, so you see, the definition of entanglement that typical, I don't know, because I have no idea how you've been introduced to entanglement, though. So it could be like, I'm going to say it from the informational point of view, or it could be more operational. Typically, entanglement is defined as a yes or no condition, meaning separability. Make sense? And typically it's defined over pure states only, not over mixed states, because separability is more complex than when you're working with general states, not necessarily pure. And we will see that. But that is a yes or no criteria, right? It's not how much criteria. We have a way of defining it, defining entanglement, that is directly constructive about how much entanglement there is. We define entanglement as the fact that when I erase one subsystem, I lose information about the other. And how much information I lose tells me how entangled I was. Does that make sense? So entanglement is related with the loss of information, and that's the core definition of entanglement in the sense that this is the, if we're gonna measure entanglement and quantify, better take a function that accounts for that information, because entanglement is defined as the information that you lose about a system A when you trace out a system B. That is entanglement from an informational point of view. Make sense?
Yeah.
And that is something weird, in a way, that we are not used to experiencing outside of quantum mechanics. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So that example is not just an example to practice, it's an example to see, okay, so there are states. And that's my definition of, I don't know, how did you define maximally entangled state in the past? Have you seen a definition of maximally entangled state? What would be the definition you saw?
I don't know, but you make a measurement and the other one's like the opposite.
Well, I can give you a state that is like that, but it's not entangled.
Would this be like you have perfect information about the other system when you measure yours?
No, because look at this one. You see, I wanted this because maximally mixed state. However, measure one of them. Then you know exactly what the other is. This is the example. Let me give you the example. You see, that's not about, this is a pet peeve of mine. Entanglement is not about measuring one and finding out everything about the other. That's the notion of correlations. Classical correlations do that for you as well. Imagine that I put a black ball and a white ball in a bag, and I don't look at the color. I have no idea. I let you randomize it. I don't look at the colors. I say, pick one. Don't show me. You pick one. Don't measure yours. I won't measure mine. Go to Alpha Centauri. Then when you're in Alpha Centauri, I say, I'm going to do something magical. Spooky. Look. Mine is black. Automatically, I know whenever you measure, yours is going to be white. I affected the result of your measurement, right? You see, that's why it really peeves me a lot. Because this is the state. That's the two balls in a bag. Knowing nothing. It's a probability distribution 50% in both. The example I gave was actually this one with the two balls, right? I know that if the first one is black, the one I got is black, then yours is white. And if I know that if mine is black, yours is white. I did this. What? I copied the same thing twice. Sorry. All right. All right, makes sense, everybody? So you see, that state has that characteristic that you gave me as a hand-wavy definition of entanglement, and it's separable 100%, right? That state is 100% separable. It's the state 1 root 2, 0, 0, tensor 1, 1, plus 1, 1, 0, 0. It's fully separable. Agreed? This is not an entangled state. If you are pulling faces, that's because maybe you're confusing separable with product. States that are not entangled, I can give you something like that. This is not entangled, but it's not a product state. It's because you've only seen entanglement in pure states then. We will discuss that. But you see, the proper definition of it, there's nothing quantum about that state. Makes sense? That's the two bags that I told you. This is not an entangled state. And yet, I can know exactly the color of something by measuring the other one. So certainly, correlations is not entanglement. Entanglement is a form of correlation, but it's not all correlations. So forget that definition of entanglement, that you know everything about the system, the other system about measuring yours. The fact that you can predict experiments about the other subsystem, in fact, you know nothing about the case of entanglement. The fact that you can predict the outcome of experiments from the other on the other system by knowing outcome of experiments on yours is a sign of correlations, not a sign of entanglement, necessarily. Makes sense?
So entanglement has to do with, I don't know, erasing information of one and not information.
Precisely. That is the informational definition of entanglement, and the one that makes sense and has no contradictions. Question?
So this would mean like, you would gain more information by measuring both systems than the sum of them individually.
Yeah, in a way you can define it like that. The information, the whole is not the sum of the parts, typical thing, right? You have, in fact, in this case, you have no information if you measure one of them at all. But if you measure both, you have full information. This is weird, huh? You start with full information. If you have access to both, you have zero ignorance. But if you only access one, you have maximum ignorance. And that's what we are going to use to define a maximally entangled state. It would make no sense to define maximally entangled state with any other definition, because if you just say, oh, a state that is not separable, then in a state that is not separable, hold on. In a state that is not separable, it doesn't tell you how much entangled it is. Maybe what if you get that state plus a tiny amount of that one? That's just not going to be separable. So it's entangled, but very little. I almost lose no information by tracing one of them. Make sense?
I think that definition only makes sense when the state is confused.
Yeah, but that is so limited, right? Yeah. The definition would make sense if the state is a pure state. I agree, because states, so pure states, if you want, let me put it like that. Product states have no correlations, neither classical nor quantum. So if you limit yourself to pure states, you can do quantum mechanics with many things, but not with balls in a bag, for example. Look how limited it is. You would not be able to do anything. Well, yeah, you'll only be able to work with molecules at absolute zero and things like that. But nothing real. Because everything real is entangled. Entanglement is ubiquitous. You find entanglement everywhere, and we will discuss that. Entanglement is not rare. In fact, what is rare is lack of entanglement. Does that make sense? We will discuss it. Questions about that? We understand the definition of entanglement that I gave you? Definition of entanglement is the amount of ignorance that you gain when you about a partial subsystem when you erase the other subsystem. Okay, we are close to having to introduce. So the next thing that we're close to the time. So the next thing that I want to do now is now that we have a notion of entanglement that is well defined, better than the usuals, right?
I could do two things. So maybe instead of doing the next thing,
I'm going to advance some.
Let me advance something, okay? We call this a state. Rho A. Rho B is a product state. And this is completely uncorrelated. That state has no, A and B have no correlations. Make sense? It's like 0, 0 ket, 1, 1 ket. I don't care. Measuring one system will tell me nothing about the other. A state that is just a classical probability distribution over product states. A state like that, okay, is a separable state. And this is, in principle, could be figuring out if it's entangled. So give me a state that is entangled. Building states that are entangled is very easy. It's the complementary problem. So distinguishing a separable state from an entangled state is a problem that is not easy to solve and also not easy to check the solution. If someone tells you, but I found this solution, can you check it? It's difficult still. Make sense? All right. So this is very important. Product is not the same as non-entangled. You can have several states. These are classical distributions over products, like the two balls in a bag. The key point of entanglement, right, is going to be that the key point on entanglement is going to be that entanglement is a measure of the ignorance that you gain when you trace out one of the systems. Now, you can tell how difficult it is for mixed states, because if I start, imagine that I start from this state. Number four. And I have all the diagonals. 0, 0, 0, 0, plus 1, 1, 1, 1, plus 1, 0, 1, 0, plus 0, 0, 1. Now I have that thing. That's a maximally mixed state of 2 qubits. It's obviously separable. In fact, it's a product. 1 over 2. Right? It's not free. It's not only separable, it's completely uncorrelated. Make sense? It's a product state. And yet, if you trace out one of the systems, you have the maximum mixed state. So it's not about the ignorance in the partial system. If you start with full ignorance, you're not going to gain any more information when you trace out one of the systems. But the difference is that here I started with full knowledge, and then I have full ignorance. Here I started with full ignorance, I still have full ignorance. So if you start with a state that is not pure, it's going to be very difficult to figure out. Just looking at the partial state, you're going to be like, well, where does that ignorance come from? Does it come from original ignorance, or does it come because of entanglement in the system? Make sense? That's what makes it tough. Make sense, everybody? We're going to learn tricks to try to determine that. For qubits, it's not tough. And for many other cases. But it will be in general. All right, so I think that's pretty much what I want to tell you about. Next lecture, I'm a little bit behind with respect to last year, but again, this is the inefficiencies of having 1 hour, 1 hour, 1 hour versus 2 hours, 1 hour. It's huge. I see it now. In this kind of courses, there's a lot of discussion. The next thing we're going to do is Bell inequalities. So we're going to discuss the EPR argument, and we're going to prove violations of Bell inequalities. Hopefully in a way that is different from the other ones that you've seen and will be seeing in other courses. Definitely in foundations you will. Maybe you saw it in quantum mechanics, I don't know. But in foundations you will see that for sure. But we will discuss a little bit our own version of it if you want. Make sense? Have you seen violations of inequalities yet? In foundations?
Yeah.
And what kind of proof? Do you know what kind of proof? So a little more general? Contextuality? Yeah, okay. We'll do CHCI. CHSH inspired proof, but much simpler, and hopefully it will allow us to discuss some things. Very similar to a more modern one, which is nice. I think it's nice to do it, I don't know. And that's going to challenge the notion. I think you can erase now. Okay, go ahead. It's incompatible with quantum mechanics. And then we can have a little discussion that you probably had in foundations, whether what's more important, locality or realism. Because again, remember that the word locality is used very willy-nilly, meaning two different things. Locality, from the foundational point of view, is related with a notion of event locality, which is a notion of, all right, yeah, things that happen here can only influence things somewhere else if there's a causal connection. I don't know if it's relativity or something else, but I need some notion of causal connection. Whereas the notion of non-locality in quantum mechanics of probability, things like that. In fact, non-productivity and so on. They are different. They are not related. They are not related unless you're doing QFT. QFT is the only framework that puts the two together. Okay? They're not related. They're different. They're very different. Well, not very different, but they are different notions of.
So in fact, quantum mechanics, we're gonna, when we discuss local realism violation, we're not gonna say quantum mechanics is non-local. We're gonna say quantum mechanics is non-realistic. That's the one thing that we're gonna cross out, not the locality. We're gonna still assume that quantum mechanics nature is locality, is local.